Accession number 29566, Rule 5.
And Spicer, Rule 5.
There's just one other thing that I want to mention before we go on to the range. There was a thing called barrack room damages. Now, which we as young intakes considered after a little while to be a real scam conducted by the NCOs. It was a way of taking money off of us. And don't forget, we only got 28 bob a week. And out of that 28 bob, we had to buy our own Blanco, Brasso. Obviously, if we went to the Naffy, we had to buy our tea and cake or whatever. We had to send 7 shillings home to your mother. So you weren't left with very much. But these NCOs used to come round every week and say, barrack room damages. Now, barrack room damages was supposed to be a penalty that was put on all the blokes in the various barrack rooms for things like broken windows or any damage at all to any bits of equipment and in the hut. And I mean, there wasn't very much equipment. And they used to con us, virtually. It used to be a couple of bob or half a crown or something each. Well, half a crown was a lot of money then. But these buggers used to take the money off you for barrack of damages. We never found out where it went, but it was supposed to be for any damage we had caused. And they used to take it off us every week. A real scam. Anyway.
Could I just ask you one thing? You mentioned that in the drill that you were learning about the army and that you learned to salute. What's the method of salute in the army?
Well, then it was up 2-3, down 2-3, with your right palm completely flat and your middle finger, it was supposed to be in line with your cap badge. Your cap badge was there over your right eye and your berry was pulled down there. And that was the way you used to it. You'd get a crowd of blokes on the square, and the command would be salute, and it'd be up 2-3, down 2-3. And then after a while, you would, like all commands, you lost the up 2-3. It was just like that, you know. The other thing I omitted to tell you about was the Paybook and your number, your army number. On the second day, you were all given an army number, and you were told in no uncertain terms that you had to learn this number because in future you wouldn't be known by anything else. You wouldn't be referred to as Mr. or even your surname on very rare occasions was used, but your number. And even today, every soldier of my age and older can reel off their army number just like that. So I would be known as 223-44-952 Spicer L, or Private Spicer L. And everybody who's been in the services will be able to reel off their number just like that. It's something you never forget. And from then on, you're always known by your last three. So my number was 223-44-952. I would be referred to as 952. Now, if there were chaps with the same names, like Jones and Jones, it would be 952 Jones or 953 Jones. Your name was used, but the number, you always knew who was who. And all your mail, all incoming mail, when mail call came and the sergeant or corporal were dishing out mail, it would be 952 Spicer, 347 Smith. So you stick your hand up and you go and get your mail. And that's it. You're never known by anything else after that. You don't adopt Mr. again until you come out. You're always known by your last three. And then you get a nice little thing called a pay book. Now, I've still got mine somewhere. Part one pay book. It's a brown little thing. It gives every bit of information about you. It tells you how old you were, where you were born, your blood group. How tall you are, how short you are, how much you weigh, where you enlisted, where your medical was, everything. Your whole potted history is in there. And there are spaces also for awards, medals, all your medical history goes in there, all your jabs go in there, all your overseas service goes in there if you go abroad. Everything. There's even a will in the back that you can fill in, you know, your advice to fill in if you go to a war zone. Don't think anybody ever did. And you present this when you get your pay. The usual process for pay is you present your... an officer sits at a table. He's... on each side of him is an NCO, be it a corporal or a sergeant. Your name is called out. Spicer 952, and you go up and he gives you your pay, he puts it in your book and you look at it and you say, pay correct sir. You salute him and you walk away. And that is the way it's always done, always has been done. I don't know if they still do it. Probably today they use the internet or they pay it in straight into a soldier's bank account. I don't know, but bank accounts were unheard of then, so you just got your pay weekly.
Would there be deductions occasionally?
No. The only deductions we had were these bloody corporals that came round and filched half a crown off you for barrack room damages. I can't think of any deductions. No.
And does the pay book stay with you for your whole of your army career?
Yeah. You're supposed to hand it in, but I brought mine with me. A lot of stuff that you forget conveniently to hand in.
When did you start rifle training? Firing and...
Yes. Now, rifle training and learning how to use the Bren gun. Before I get to that... No, I'll do that first and then I'll come back to what I was going to say. We were given the rifle, and after about 4 weeks, I guess it was, then we started training with a rifle. And then, but no ammunition, of course. And the bolt used to have to be taken out each night, and there's a box in the corner of the barrack room with a padlock on. That's called the bolt box. All your bolts go in there. Although you haven't got any ammunition, all bolts must go in the bolt box, and it's padlocked, and it's locked and keys kept by the NCO. We were taken down to the firing range, and this is set out from, in those days, used to be 100 yards, from 100 yards up to about 600 yards. So you get 100, 200, 300, 400, 500, 600, and they're all marked. And you start off by splitting the group into two. One half goes into what they call the butts. Now, the butts are at the end of the range. They are about 6 foot below ground, and they're all concrete. And in that big concrete bunker, there are several targets, and the targets are all on pulleys, and you pull wires and they go up and down. Like that. There's usually two targets on each firing point, and there's about 8 firing points on the range. So you can imagine the butts there and the firing range down here, 100, 200, 300, and so on. And there's two targets on pulleys. They're large ones. They're about 6 by 6, I guess. And they're coloured targets. You've got the yellow ball, and then you've got the inner, you've got the outer, and they're just like a big round ball that you find on a fuselage of an aircraft, like that. And the idea of the people in the butts is you've got buckets of wallpaper paste and little bits of paper. And the people that are firing, so you get a guy out there and you get another one there and you get another one there, and so you get about 8 of them all on firing towards the target. And the idea of the people in the butts is that they mark. So the bloke's firing away. Perhaps the order of command will be, they start you off at the nearest possible 100 yards. And the order will come to get down on the ground in a prone position. That's flat down. And there's a way of doing that. I mean, people have their heels up, but you're supposed to have your feet, you know, spread out properly. No sort of pulling yourself at you. Completely flat, and I found, or most people find, firing in the prone position is very, very awkward. It's a lot of people now, you see them on the telly, the guys in Afghanistan, they're firing from the crouch, what they call a crouch position. Prone is very, very awkward, although it's still used. The order will come, load. And you will push 5 rounds into your magazine. And then you cock the rifle and the round goes up the tube. And safety catch on. And then it will be 5 rounds in your own time, fire. Off with the safety catch and you fire in your own time. And they tell you, certainly with the Lee Enfield then, which they don't use now, of course, bloody great big heavy thing with a big brass butt, you've got to really pull it into your shoulder, because once you fire that thing, it jumps. I mean, most of the boat, when they came back from firing, all their shoulders, mass of bruises. It's got a hell of a kick on. And the idea is, every time a bullet passes through a target, it will leave a hole. Now, you've got a marker as well, which is like a broomstick with a little red disc on. And every time the bloke fires, and whereabouts he hits it on the target, you mark. So if it's a bullseye, you point, you have the round all over the ball. If it's an inner, you put it there. If it's an outer, if it's not on the target, you don't signal at all. Now, there were some poor buggers who didn't even get a shot on the target. Well, for the first time, you don't take any notice of this because it's completely new. But as you're doing this, you know, week after week, you are supposed to be getting more proficient at firing a rifle. So therefore, you would expect more shots to hit the target somewhere on the target. And then in the end, you have to shoot for your pay. Or you get extra money if you can shoot properly.
How do you aim the rifle?
You have a backsight and a foresight. And they will tell you, you know, if you're on the 100 yards, you set it. They're all graduated at the back. But the trouble is, a lot of these old rifles, the sights were out. So you have an NCO at the back of you who may say to you, you're firing slightly to your right, bring it over a bit, and they've got a little wheel on them, and the sight goes up and down, and also it will go it traverses across. So you can adjust. Some people, even if they've got the sight adjusted to the correctly, will never hit the target because they're just bloody awful shots.
And in pressing the trigger, is there a way of pressing the
yes,
trigger?
Yes, you feel the trigger, what they call feel the trigger. There's a you come up until you feel a resistance, and then you know the next time you press it, it's going to let the round off. I mean, people when they first start, they just press the trigger and you get shots flying all over the place. Now, as you progress over the weeks, you're gradually brought back until you can fire from, I think the most we ever fired from was either between 600 to 800 yards. Well, if you're then firing for pay and you're not getting any holes in your target, this is another old trick that Charlie taught us, was you've got a pencil. And when you pull the target down, if the target is blank, you do that.
Push holes through the target.
That's right. Push holes through the target. You don't put them all in the same place, obviously. You might give the bloke one bullseye, a couple of inners or an outer, and then you shove the target up.
And you would do that for anybody?
You would do that for anybody. That's how that problem is overcome.
Were you always firing from the prone position, or did they teach you to
fire from the prone? No, you fire from the prone, you fire from the crouch, the kneel, and standing.
In doing those, is there any different techniques for you've explained the prone position, there was a technique that you had to, how your feet had to be. Is that the case for all of the different types of firing?
The method of firing the rifle is exactly the same. It's just that your position is altered.
Say you're standing, you're firing from the standing. What's the position you have to assume for that?
The position for standing would be preferably left foot forward. Obviously some people are left-handed, so it would be the reverse foot. Left foot forward, and if you can use something as a either cover or as a stabilising effect. Say, for instance, you're street fighting. If you're peering around the corner, you push yourself up as close to the wall as possible so that your rifle is bang up against the wall, so you've got some sort of leverage. Prone position, as I said, most blokes find very uncomfortable because you're lying full length, but you've got to raise your head. And it's very, very difficult to have a rifle and look up like that with both elbows on the floor like that. I mean, if you try it sometime, it's difficult. I mean, probably not with today's weapons because they're much shorter, they're much lighter. But a Lee Enfield, you're talking something 3.5 foot long, very heavy, very cumbersome, got a hell of a kick, bloody good rifle, mind you, got a hell of a kick, and they are very heavy to cradle. You're cradling the thing in that hand with the butt pushed firmly into your shoulder, and you've got to, you get cramp in your neck. You do this for a long time, and the back of your neck aches like hell. And you're trying to, you've got one eye closed, and you're trying to, and the end of the thing is wavering around. And the other thing they tell you to do is, just before you fire, is you hold your breath. You sort of come up, and you think you've got it, and you bang. Because you don't want it, you want as least movement as possible. Now, with the Bren gun, doesn't matter so much. Semi-automatic machine gun. You've got the thing in your shoulder, but you've got legs. You haven't got a cradle, although later on, when you know we went aboard, it's a thing that's carried. But you've got legs. It's on the floor. So all you do is you're holding the butt and you're just firing. But all the weight is taken off you. And you can traverse it right and left. And it's being the type of gun it is, or was, it's not used anymore, single shot or semi-automatic, it's easy because you can cover a field of fire and you haven't got to worry about the thing flying all over the place because you've got a tripod that you're sitting on.
Did you, when you used the Bren gun, did you do it in exactly the same way as you've done with the rifle training, or is there a different technique for firing?
No, it's not the same. I've only experienced using the Bren in the prone position, but I'd say with firing the Bren, all the weight's taken off the off of you on the legs. It's easy to use. You've got the same sort of sights, but with a semi-automatic machine gun, you're not worried about sights. You're just sending a burst in a general direction. And if anybody gets in the way, then tough luck.
And firing a burst, obviously when you were firing the rifle, you explained that you went for the point of resistance. Is that exactly the same on the trigger of the Bren gun?
Not really. No. No, you just let fly with the thing.
And do you keep it on for a certain time, or...?
It's just a thing that you've got, I can't remember, is it 28 rounds in a Bren mag? You just use it, you know, to your own satisfaction, virtually. You can set it either on single shot, one shot at a time, or you can set it on semi-automatic. It's just like... It really depends what you've got in front of you, I guess. I mean, we used it in Malaya, but the blokes used to carry it, but they used to let fly. You wouldn't keep it on and run the whole mag out. It's just a quick burst. Perhaps you might send off 10 shots or so, or 15 or 20. Or whatever.
Did it have the same kind of recoil as the Lee-Enfield?
Not quite as much, no. It did have a kick, but you're not aware of it so much. I think because of the tripod is dug into the ground and it doesn't seem to come back so much. It seems to sort of, I don't know, it's cushioned in some way. It seems to be cushioned in some way.
And the tripod, when it's in the ground, does it have spikes or something?
It's got it's flat. A flat tripod fits over the underneath the barrel, which you can take off. You can take the legs off or fold the legs up. They're flat plates, and in the middle of the plate is a little spike, and the spike digs in the ground.
And you were firing on the ranges. Would you fire at the same type of target?
Exactly the same type of target, yeah.
Now, you mentioned, obviously, one of the tricks for people who were not hitting the target when they were firing for pay. Were there people in your platoon who just couldn't get the hang of firing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there were one or two who would never hit the target at all. Mind you, they always ended up with pencil marks in their target, but I've seen blank targets on more than one occasion. Even at the end of 12 weeks training, they still couldn't hit the target.
What about yourself? How did you take to it?
I was no worse or better than anybody else. I suppose I was what you call an average shot. I managed to hit the target, whether they were all inners or balls, I don't know, but I always managed to get. I never. Let's put it this way: I never got anybody pasting bits over my holes that I hadn't made. That was the other thing: that the wallpaper paste and the bits of paper were for pasting over real or in some cases, imaginary holes, because you have to repair the targets as you go along. As one target goes up, the other one comes down, and the holes have to be repaired. So you slap a bit of wallpaper paste on, you've got these little bits of paper, and you stick them on, and the targets repair. And then when that next target comes down, that one goes up.
And you said there was an was there always an NCO with you?
There's always more than one. There's three or four NCOs on the range, either at the back of you, telling you. They've usually got binoculars or spy glasses or whatever, saying number one to your right more, or number two to your left more, or up a bit or down a bit, or adjust your sights. Or and then occasionally, if they weren't satisfied, they might get down beside you and fire off one round themselves, just to see if the rifle was firing okay. Because a lot of those Lee Enfields weren't, I won't say serviceable, but they weren't firing true. Even when the sights were adjusted, they were off target. Really, I mean, although the Lee Enfield was still in service then, but the Lee Enfield that they had at the training establishments, I think had been through the mill. They weren't necessarily the ones that you would have been issued in a theatre of war if you were given Lee Enfields.
So it was more probably a problem with someone with a rifle.
I tell you what, it always reminded me of the sort of things you got at the fairground, which seemed to be purposely off so you wouldn't win a prize.
Were there any safety instructions that you had to have while you were on the range that they...
The main safety exchange was from the NCOs, who used to say, "Don't get up, turn round and point that bloody thing at me, soldier." Because you did come across that very, very occasionally. A bloke would get up and say, "This isn't working properly, sergeant." And he'd say, "Point that thing the other bloody way." But no, just take your time. Because that was the word of command. In your own time, fire.